Good morning. Today's Avon of Bodhisar Zayindal. We're in the Mishnah on the very top of the Amud. And we start off today by discussing, once again, Isuri Mashu, the discussion that we had yesterday's daf, we're going to have again today. And we're going to discuss various times in Halacha when there is simply not going to be Bittul. Again, let's take a step backwards. Let's review what we know. Whenever you have a Tarovus, when you have a mixture of Isser and Heter, so the general rule is that as long as you have Rov, as long as you have majority of Heter over that of Isser, so then there's Bittul, then there's going to be nullification. That would be in a very straightforward scenario where I have two pieces of Heter, one piece of Isser, and so I have now a simple majority of two versus one, so then there's going to be Bittul. A number of times where a simple majority is not going to be sufficient. A simple example would be, let's say that the mixture between the Isser and the Heter imparted a taste into the Heter. In other words, let me say a little clearer. So let's say the Isser was a liquid, and the Isser now went into the Heter, and it imparted a taste into the Heter. So if there's a taste that's imparted, when halach we generally refer to as a mixture of lach balach, so if a taste has been imparted, so now not only do I have to negate the actual Isser itself, but I have to negate the taste. How much of a ratio do I need in order to negate the taste? So that, generally speaking, is a ratio of 60 to 1. Yesterday we talked about wine and water. For wine and water, it may be a different ratio. It may be a ratio of 6 to 1. But generally speaking, in order to negate taste, I need a ratio of 60 to 1. There are other areas in halacha where a simple ratio of a majority or even a ratio of 60 to 1 is not going to be sufficient. I'll throw out a couple of examples. The truma, for example, even in a yavish b'yavish, even if the mixture is a dry mixture, in other words, it's not imparting taste, but I just simply have one truma apple that gets mixed up, so there, bittul will not occur until you have 100 times more than the truma. Another example where I need more than just a simple majority would be arla. Arla, klai, karim, in order for bittul to occur, I need 1 to 200. So many times in halacha where We go over the basic rules of bittul. I sometimes need a majority, I sometimes need 16, sometimes I need 100, sometimes even 200. And now in our Mishnah, so our Mishnah is going to go over the cases where there's not going to be any bittul at all. In other words, basically it's bittul blocking. In other words, bittul has been blocked. And when I say been blocked, I mean that the chachamim have blocked bittul, meaning for various reasons and circumstances. So the Chachamim altogether said, you know what, there's not going to be bittul whatsoever. And so what we're learning together in our Mishnah is a number of examples where there simply will not be bittul. In other words, it doesn't matter what the ratio is. And it could be afilu be'elef, even if it's in 1,000, even more. Doesn't matter. In other words, even one trace amount of the Isser will result in never being bittul. And therefore, the whole Tarovus is going to be Asr. Eila Asr and Bisr and Bechol Shehu. So the Mishnah over here says, here's a list of things that are also in the Isser is b'kol shehu. First example of the Mishnah is Yain Nesach. So Yain Nesach, if you take a look at Rashi right away says, and we're not talking about the lach balach mixture. We're not talking about where actual liquid Yain Nesach gets mixed in with kosher wine, but rather, says Rashi, chavis be'elef chavios. We're talking about over here barrels. One barrel of wine gets mixed up with 1,000 other barrels of wine. Okay, why exactly is Rashi giving the example of barrels? As we get to the Gemara, it will become very clear why Rashi specifically chose that example of a barrel. So, Yain Nesach v'avodas kochavim. Avodas kochavim. You have some sort of tzur, some sort of image that was worshipped, and it got mixed up with another 1,000 images that were not worshipped. But still, in other words, once I have now an item that is an chefsa shel avodas zara getting mixed up with other items, so once again, there's never going to be a bittul. Oros levuvim, the next example in the Mishnah, the oros levuvim, the hides of an animal that was used for takrofis avodah zarah. How do I know that these hides were used for avodah zarah? So there's a circular hole in the hide opposite where the heart was. So what used to be the practice back then is that for avodah zarah, what they would do is they would cut a hole in the chest of the animal. They would then pull in, rip the heart out, and that's how they would be mocked of the animal. You don't know the whole history, but what you do know is that you have a hide in front of you, and there's a hole, there's a circular hole in the hide right where the heart was. So that is a good amount of forensic evidence that now we know that the hide was used for this practice of takrovus avodah zarah. Therefore, this hide, if it gets mixed up with other hides, it's going to be asur nafilu b'mashu. Shor haniskal. Another example of something that gets mixed up is the shor haniskal. Shor haniskal, an animal that gored a person to death. This animal now is a shor haniskal. It needs to be put to death. And under these circumstances, the animal is asur bahana. If this animal gets mixed up with other animals, so the entirety of the mixture is going to be asur. Egla arufa. I have an animal that was used as part of the procedure of the egla arufa, where a body was found proximate to one of two cities. And what we're going to do is we're going to measure, we're going to find out which city is even closer. That city then is going to have to go through the procedure of the egla arufa, where it culminates with the breaking of the neck, snapping of the neck of this calf. And once we do that, the calf is going to be asur bahana. If this calf gets mixed in with other calves, so it's going to be asur afila b'chol shehu. Tzipori mitzora. Another procedure in which you take two birds at the beginning of the taharas hamitzora, when someone is undergoing the purification of tzaras. In other words, he had tzaras, he's free of tzaras, and now he's going to go through the purification process. So step one of the process involves two birds. One of the birds is going to be shechted, the other bird is not going to be shechted. The unshechted bird is dipped into the blood of the shechted bird, sprinkled on the mitzora, and that's day one of the procedure. This bird that was shechted is tzipori mitzora, and therefore is going to be asur bahana, and if that bird gets mixed in with other birds, it's going to result in no bittul. Se'ar nazir, the hair of a nazir. Hair of a nazir, which is clipped and put under the pot where the shlamim is being cooked. So this hair is asur behana'a, and if this hair gets mixed in with other hairs, so then that's going to be asur afilu b'choshu. Peter chamor, firstborn donkey, firstborn donkey is asur behana'a. Not according to everybody, but according to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, it's asur behana'a. And so therefore, if this donkey gets mixed in with other donkeys, so it's going to be asur afilu b'choshu. Basar b'chalav, here's a tricky one. Basar b'chalav sounds like it's talking about meat and milk. That's what it sounds like. Take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi says, I'll tell you what the pshat is not. I'm going to read Rashi inside. Basar b'chalav. Katichas basar shenis basar b'chalav. V'nesra b'nosin tam. V'chazar v'nesarva be'elav chatichos. Asuras kulam ba'ana. Okay. First, what Rashi does is he tells us what he believes the pshat is. The pshat is, says Rashi, is that once you have milk going into meat and cook with meat, once it imparts a taste into the meat, now you have a chatichas bas b'chalav. So in other words, it's now a cheftz of bas b'chalav. It is not only prohibited to eat, but you're not allowed to get benefit from it as well. And therefore, if this piece of meat gets mixed in with other pieces of meat, so then it's going to be kula asr. V'haytana asavish bas b'chalav isra hana depukti b'chalav basr b'shchitas chulin. So Rashi points out that obviously our Tana is of the opinion that it is that basar b'chalav, once the meat and milk is cooked together, it's asur b'hana. V'yesh shelamedim in mishnah standard basar b'chalav b'mashu. Now, some people look at our mission, they say, oh, you know what the mission means? It means as follows. If I have a drop of milk that drops onto a piece of meat while it's cooking, so then that meat's going to be asur, and it's going to be asur afil b'cholshu. Usvurm d'hai b'cholshu d'ktani k'gon tipas chalash anafla k'deira. So some people think that's what our Mishnah means. That if I have a drop of milk that falls into a pot of meat, so then it's going to be us, and it's going to be us even b'choshu. Rashi says that is patently incorrect. V'tozhu b'yadam. Rashi says that's a mistake. So first of all, if you haven't figured it out yet, the Gemara is going to tell us there is a common denominator of all the cases of the Mishnah, and that is that they are a davar shebeminyan. These are things which are large items, significant items, items that are counted. And so we're not talking about a drop of milk. We're talking about a piece of meat. So mishum de darkan limanos chashiv v'lobato. V'iba basar shenisarav tama b'chalav kamayri. If we're talking about a meat where a drop of milk falls on it, oh, b'tipas chalav shenaf l'kaderes basar ami havi davar shebeminyan. That's not a davar shebeminyan. You're not counting drops of milk. V'od ha'u kimna kol isurim shebetorah shelo b'mina b'nosin tam. V'afilu rav shmol dami b'mashu b'shelo b'mina moda. And on top of that, says Rashi, remember we just learned yesterday that even according to Rav and Shmuel, we take a much more stringent position, that when it's min b'mino, it's asur b'choshu, and that's true by all Yisrael in the Torah. But if it's min b'sheino mino, So then it's bitam, benosin tam, meaning bitter will occur once you hit the point of nosin tam, but only when you get to the point of nosin tam. So if a drop of milk falls into a pot of meat, there will not be an asinus tam, and even according to Rav and Shmuel, who takes a more chamer position, there is going to be bitter. And furthermore, says the Gemara, says Rashi, uvakula shchitus chulin amina bas bechal benosin tam. You open up a Gemara chulin, you go through the perek of shchitus chulin, and you're going to find consistently throughout the Masechta over there that the that Basar B'chalav is only going to be Aser when there's enough milk to impart taste into the meat. So Rashi really goes to task on anyone who suggests that our Mishnah is talking about a drop of milk falling into meat, that it's Aser B'kol Shehu. Rashi says it's patently incorrect. Okay. Back to the Mishnah. We have just a couple more cases of the Mishnah. Now, this next case in the Mishnah is controversial, whether it belongs in the Mishnah or does not belong in the Mishnah. The Gaon takes it out of the Mishnah. Sir HaMishtaleach, the goat that's thrown off the cliff on Yom Kippur. Okay, not for now, but see the note on the Gaon in terms of should it be there, should it be taken out, why should it be taken out? Okay. Continuing with the Mishnah, Chul Shenishchutu Ba'azara, and also a non-consecrated animal that was shechted in the Azara. So again, another example of something which is Asur B'Hana'ah. So Elu Asur B'Asur B'Chol Shehu. So the Mishnah now creates the end bracket where in the beginning of the Mishnah we learned that these are items that are Asur B'Chol Shehu. Any amount is going to be Asur. And at the end, the Mishnah just simply brackets it off as well. And we will discuss what the Mishnah is trying to communicate to us by giving us a summary statement at the end of the Mishnah. Tana Mai Kachashiv. Here we go. The Gemara wants to know, what is the common denominator of the Mishnah? So if we're talking about a davish b'minyan, meaning items that are so significant that whenever sold, they're sold by count. So we're talking about big ticket items, right? Hides of an animal. And by the way, now you understand why Rashi, when he talked about Yain Nesach, was talking about barrels of Yain Nesach. We're not talking about the actual liquid wine. We're talking about the barrels containing the wine. If I have a barrel with wine in it, that's a davar shebeminyan. The barrels are sold by count. So all the items in the Mishnah are items that are sold by count. They're big items. Litzinami chatichas nevela. So the Gemara says, so then what the Mishnah should include is nevela, meaning a piece of nevela. A nice big piece of nevela. Why is that not in the Mishnah? And is or an akachashav. And if the Mishnah is common denominator, or those things which are asur bahana, and if you look back over the Mishnah, and go over every case of the Mishnah, every case of the Mishnah is something which is asur b'hana. So let's name it Nami Chametz B'Pesach. So the Gemara says so. Chametz B'Pesach is also asur b'hana. Meaning once we get to midday today, although the truth of the matter is, right, it's our Pesach today. So the once we get to Chatzos Yom, so Chametz is now going to be asur min haTorah. Although it may be that it's not going to be asur b'hana until tonight. In other words, only on Pesach itself is it asur b'hana. But in any event, the chametz b'Pesach is asur b'hana for sure over the course of Yom Tov, the 7 days of Pesach. So why is the chametz b'Pesach in the list of our Mishnah? Am Rabbi Chiya bar Abba v'tem Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha haitana tarte islay davar v'shebeminyan v'isurei hana'a. So the Gemara says, right, and so therefore what it means is as follows. So in order to qualify and make it into our Mishnah, you have to be one of two things. You have to be both be a davar shebeminyan, meaning a large ticket item that is sold by count, and also on top of that, you have to be asur b'hana. So if you go back over the Mishnah, you go over every case in the Mishnah, every case in the Mishnah actually has both of these characteristics. One, it is asur b'hana, and two, it is a davar shebeminyan. And here now, let's take a really interesting turn towards Rashi, where now that we know that, now that we know what our Mishnah, what makes it into the Mishnah, so what if you're lacking one of these two? What if you're not a davar shebeminyan, or what if you're not asur b'hana? What then do we say regarding bittul? Rashi writes as follows: Tarte islay davar shebeminyan v'isurei hana. I'm reading the Rashi inside. It's the first wide line. Rashi writes: Deika tarte lechashivusa dechashiv isur didhu hu delo batul avachametz prusa bepesach ho ve'in darko limanos batul. So Rashi says, you know, chametz bepesach. You know, we're talking about now not a loaf of bread. We're talking about a slice of bread. A slice of bread on Pesach. So, if now it gets mixed up with other. Now, for us, by the way, it's a little bit strange. How do you confuse bread and matzah? Meaning, how do you confuse chametz and non-chametz? So, the truth of the matter is that there really is a fine line between chametz and Pesach. That's chametz and Pesach. There's a fine line between chametz and matzah. The Gemara's in Pesachim spent some time giving us telltale signs of when the dough starts to turn into chametz. But the truth of the matter is that on certain some occasions, it's really hard to tell the difference between one and another. So if I have chametz and non-chametz get mixed up together, so Rashi over here is about to teach us that there will be bittul. Now I know that's really difficult because the Gemara Pesachim says that chametz on Pesach is aser b'mashu. Even any amount is going to be aser. I will explain in just a moment what Rashi is doing in terms of resolving that issue. But in the meantime, however, it's not in our Mishnah, meaning the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, that says that in order for there to be aser b'mashu, it has to be, number one, a davar shebeminyan, a large ticket item, which is sold by counting it individually, and two, it has to be aser b'ana. So Rashi over here is telling us that when it comes to chametz b'pesach, so it is aser b'ana, but it's not a davar shebeminyan. And therefore what? So let's go back to the Rashi. I'm going to read the Rashi inside. So Rashi says that when it comes to chametz b'pesach, since it's a slice of bread, so therefore it's going to be batel. And therefore, says Rashi, what do you do? Mashlich echa mehem lanar. So you take now one of the pieces. I don't know which one is the chametz. So I'll take one of the pieces and I'll throw it into the river. Ve'ashar nosin lekaba. And then the rest of the chametz, what I'll do is I'll give it to my kelv, I'll give it to my dog. Okay. And now I'm going to continue reading the Rashi, although I will back up and I'll explain this a lot better. Because what just happened in Rashi? Yeah. Chametz gets mixed up with non-chametz on Pesach. Just throw one of them away, and the rest of it you give to your dog. Why don't you eat it? What are you doing giving it to your dog? So again, I'm going to come back to this. I'm going to circle around and come back to this part of Rashi in just a moment. Let me just first finish the Rashi. Chatichas nevela. Now, when it comes to a piece of nevela, afagav the davar shebeminyan. Now, certainly it's significant as the davar shebeminyan, but kevin de la visoranahu, but la baruba. So, but it's not an isarana. Nevela is only aser b'achil. It's not aser b'ana. And so, therefore, it's bata barov v'chad shade leklavim v'inuch shara b'achila. So, here's what you'll do, says Rashi. You'll do is you'll take one of them and you'll throw it away. And then, as far as the others are concerned, so there you're allowed to eat the other pieces. Okay. Nevela is a lot easier. So first I'm going to tackle Nevela, and then I'll come back to Chametz B'Pesach. Nevela and Chametz B'Pesach didn't make it into our Mishnah because they don't have both. To make it into our Mishnah, you have to be both Isser Hana, and you have to be a Davar Shebeminyan. And so Chametz and Nevela are missing one of those, each one missing one of those characteristics. So again, let's start with nevela. Nevela is easier. Rashi is telling us that when I have a nevela piece, which is a davar shebeminyan, that gets mixed in with other pieces, but it's not asar ba'ana, so therefore there's bittul. Rashi, however, says, and for me to eat it, however, even though bittul has occurred, what I first have to do is I have to take out one of the pieces, throw out one of the pieces. This is throughout halacha known as Rashi's chumrah. Meaning, when I say Rashi's chumrah, I mean the Rashi we're learning right now. Meaning that even when bittul occurs, says Rashi, right here in the Avodah Zarah and Daf Ayin Dalet, even when bittul occurs, you still, says Rashi, have to do is take one of the pieces and throw it away. What does it do? It reduces your chances of eating the Isser. Now, because what ends up happening is you don't know which piece you're throwing away, but you know that there was one piece of Isser in there. So there is a chance, although not a really good one, but there is a chance that the piece that you threw away is actually the piece of the Isser. And therefore, Rashi says that in order to eat the Tarovis that did undergo bittul, so what you have to do is you have to throw one of the pieces away first. When the Rama brings down this Rashi, the Rama says, look, it's a chumrah, meaning it's a stringency. Gemara never said this. Rashi over here is introducing this. So the Rama says, yeah, we should follow it, but let's understand that it's a chumrah of Rashi, meaning it's a stringency of Rashi, and it's not the baseline halacha. What is the baseline halacha? The Shulchan Aruch brings down that when I have a tarovis of 2 and 1, of yavish v'yavish, so bittul has occurred. Can I eat all three pieces simultaneously at the same time? So the Shulchan Aruch says no. In other words, I know one of them is usher, but in other words, I'll have to eat them individually. There's a longer discussion about whether one person can eat them or do I need two people to eat them. But still, in other words, bevasach is I can't eat them, but you can eat them one after another. But Rashi over here says that I throw one of the pieces away, it reduces the chances of me actually consuming one of the pieces. Just in general, it's good to know that on this question of bittul barov, when it's yavish b'yavish, like we're discussing right now, so there's a really interesting opinion of the Rush, which seemingly is not brought down la halacha, who basically takes a much more fundamental approach when it comes to bittul. Meaning when I have two pieces of heter, one piece of iser, so we're saying right now that, well, the statistically you're fine, and therefore the Torah allows you to eat it. And again, according to Rashi, first you have to throw out a piece. But statistically you're fine. According to the Rosh says, no, fundamentally, that's not the way to look at bittul. Fundamentally, the way to look at bittul is that when I have two and one, two pieces of heter, one piece of iser, so according to the Rosh, it's chaticha, according to the Rosh, the nishapech iser leheter. The iser actually converts into heter. That's the way the Rosh looks at bittul. But in the meantime, however, our discussion over here is going to assume that no, it's not based on the conversion, but rather it's based on the fact that it's just probability you're not going to be eating the iser. Anyway, okay, that's in terms of nevela. Now let's go back to Rashi in terms of chametz bepesach. Here it gets really interesting. Chametz bepesach says Rashi. And again, what a perfect time to talk about it. Erev Pesach, but chametz bepesach on Rashi, there will be bittul, says Rashi. The Gemara Pesachim says there's not going to be bittul, meaning it's one of the Yisurim Mashu. Yeah, but Rashi's bothered by the fact that over here in our Gemara, it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. And it's not mentioned in the Mishnah because even though it's Asabana, but it's not a Davar Shebeminyan. There is subject to bittul. So Rashi, therefore, what he does is really interesting. What he does is he takes a compromised position. What's that middle position? How can it be bittul and no bittul? So Rashi basically is writing as follows. The other is going to be bittul. Meaning if I have a slice of bread that gets mixed up with non-chametz crackers on Pesach, or again, for us it's kind of clear what's matzah and what's not matzah. But if I have a mixture of the two, so what Rashi is teaching us is that there will be bittul in the sense that it's no longer going to be aser b'hana. I'm allowed to get benefit from it if I have such a mixture. That's why Rashi writes over here that if I have a chametz piece of bread gets mixed up with other non-chametz breads, so you'll throw one away, because again, that's chumas Rashi. The chumas Rashi is to take one of the tarovas and throw it away, and then what I'm going to do, says Rashi, is I'm going to give the rest of it to my dog. I can't eat it, but I can give the rest of it to my dog. Why can't I eat it? Meaning, if bittul has occurred, why can't I eat it? Rashi over here is basically balancing our Gemara and the Gemara in Pesachim. Our Gemara says that there's bittul. The Gemara in Pesachim says that there's no bittul. Well, how can that be? What Rashi really is doing over here now is he's creating a compromised position between our Gemara and the Gemara in Pesachim. Our Gemara says that there's no bittul. Our Gemara says that there's no bittul. That's talking about in terms of the Isser of Achila. I'm not allowed to eat it. The Gemara in Pesachim says that there is... Our Gemara says that there is bittul by chametz bepesach. So that means that there's going to be bittul as far as Hana is concerned. The Gemara in Pesachim says that there's no bittul that's talking about the Isser of Achila. In other words, I'm not allowed to eat it. That's what Rashi is doing over here. And to say it simply, it's a real bit chiddush on Rashi. Where if I have a mixture of chametz bePesach, of chametz in non-chametz on Pesach, so Rashi takes this middle ground where there's bittul vis-a-vis hana'a, meaning I can give it to my dog, but there's no bittul vis-a-vis achila, I'm not allowed to eat it. Okay. And just conceptually, the idea that I can separate iser from hana'a. Okay. Let's go on in the Gemara. We are an Ayin Dalam and Aleph. We're just after the Gemara telling us what it takes in order to make it into our Mishnah. The Lisne, in the Gemara, about 10 lines from the top of the Amud, it's the last two words in the line. Okay, so, in order to make it into our Mishnah, what do you need two qualifications. One, you need to be an Isser Anan. Two, you also need to be a Davar Shebeminyan. Okay? If that's true, says what the Gemara is going to ask now, is that our Mishnah does not seem to be an exhaustive list. The Lisne goes, V'Reboni B'dan, the Davar Shebeminyan V'Issuri Hanan. Who? So the Gemara says, what about the nuts and pomegranates, varieties of nuts and pomegranates, where if they are either of Arla or if they are of Kalaya Kerem, so then we know the halacha is that they are not only a Davish of Aminyan, but they're also Asar Bana. They should have made it into our Mishnah, right? So the Gemara says, Atanale Hasam. The Gemara says, yeah, but everyone here knows the Mishnah Arla, okay? or everyone's about to learn the Mishnah Arla. But in any event, everyone knows the Mishnah Arla in the third perek, Arayla Arla Arla, Arayla Klai Karen, Klai Karen. So in other words, these items were listed in the Mishnah Arla. So once they're listed in the Mishnah Arla, so basically I'll take both Mishnahs and arrive at the right conclusion. Our Mishnah tells us that if you're a Davish Beminyan, you're also Ba'ana, so there's no Beitel. Okay, so then I'll go to the Mishnah Arla, and the Mishnah Arla just gives me a list of other things that are Davish Beminyan and Asar Ba'ana. V'lithi kikar shol balabayis, lingin chametz b'pesach. So the Gemara says, what about a loaf of bread? Previously we were talking about a slice of bread. What about a loaf of bread? If a loaf of bread gets mixed in with other loaves on Pesach, so now I have a Davar Shebeminyan and it's Asar Ba'ana. So man shaman damar le Rabbi Akiva hu tana le hausam Rabbi Akiva mosef is kikar shol balabayis. So the Gemara says, yeah, but again, you learn the Mishnah Arla, and the Mishnah Arla teaches us that according to Rabbi Akiva, you include kikar shol balabayis. So again, once we're referencing the Mishnah Arla, so then we know that according to Rabbi Akiva, we're going to be adding a loaf of bread as well on Pesach. Hare eila lamute mai lamute davish beminyan v'la v'isurina inam lamute isurina v'lo davish beminyan. So the Gemara says, and as far as the last point of the Mishnah, the summary statement of the Mishnah, it's just there now to teach me that in order to make it into the Mishnah, you have to have both. It has to both be a davish beminyan, and it has to be an isur hana as well. Okay, correct. In other words, outside of what we learned in the Mishnah and the examples that were given by the Gemara, the Rimonim and the Agozim and the Kikaro, so then yes, that's correct. There's nothing else that fits into this discussion. Before we leave the sugya, so again, I explain the sugya like Rashi, where Rashi says that if you don't have both qualifications, so Rashi says there would be bittul. Even by Chametz B'Pesach, there's going to be bittul, which allows for Hana. By Nevela, there would be bittul. Chatichas Nevela, there would be bittul, which according to Rashi would allow for Achila. So I explained the entire sugya like Rashi. Just note that the Tosos fundamentally disagrees with Rashi. Chametz B'Pesach, according to Tosos, is Aser, and there's not going to be bittul. There's never going to be bittul, according to Tosos. And you're not even allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to get benefit from it. Nothing. Says Tosfos, what are we going to do with our entire sugya? So see Tosfos for a different take on how to learn our entire sugya. Right. Why isn't it mentioned in the Mishnah? Okay, so you have to learn Tosfos. But in other words, Tosfos does not learn like Rashi.
It takes a piece of bread out, it's increasing the odds that you will be honest.
Yeah, the Chumash Rashi, I've been thinking about this for a long time. Chumash Rashi helps and it hurts. Meaning, applying the Chumash Rashi of whenever I have a majority of Heter and a minority of Isser, so then what I do is I take one away. If I end up taking one that's Heter, so now it's one and one. Meaning, it's one piece of... Meaning, if I took out the Isser, that's great. But if I took out the Heter, so then I have one piece of Heter, one piece of Isser. That's remaining. Yeah, so I've Martin, it happens to be your question has bothered me for a long time. So, okay, I don't know. In other words, one day I'm going to have to do is to sit down with a real statistician and have him explain to me like the statistics of what happens when I take one of them out. Meaning, does that now increase or decrease my probability of eating the Isser? So when I get a real mathematician on my hands, and I'm able to understand him. So then, I'll pass it along. But yeah, that's a wonderful question. Okay, the next Mishnah on the Daf and Ayin Dalam and Aleph, Yain Esech Shenafel Abor Kula Asar Ba'ana. So if I have Yain Esech that falls into a pit, the entire pit now is going to be Asar Ba'ana. In yesterday's Daf, we talked about Kama Bato. We talked about how there is an opinion. It's not the one the Gemara concludes, but there is an opinion that when Yain Esech falls into other wine, so it does become bittul incrementally, just bittul as it's coming in. So it would be difficult to learn our Mishnah. That part's true. But again, that's an opinion that we learned yesterday, not necessarily the accepted opinion. Yain eser shenafel abar kulo asar ba'ana. The entire pit is now going to be asar ba'ana, meaning all the wine in the pit is going to be asar ba'ana. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer yimaker kulo lo v'kochavim chutz midme yain eser shebo. And Rav Shimon Gamliel, whose opinion we saw a number of times throughout the Masechta, but here's the actual Mishnah inside. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to sell this mixture and just simply exclude the Yain Esech of the mixture. When he says exclude, what exactly is meant by exclusion? So the okay. So hold on. Hold off one second. I'll come back and I'll answer that question in just a moment. Amar Rav Halacha Rishim and Gamliel. Chavis bechavios. So Rav says, look, the halacha does follow like Rishim and Gamliel, but only in the following limited scenario, where I have a number of barrels. One of the barrels is the Yain Esach barrel, and it got lost and got confused amongst all the other barrels. Under those circumstances, now what? So now, says Rav, do we subscribe to the rule of Rishim and Gamliel, where I can sell the entire load of barrels to a non-Jew, excluding the barrel that's Yain Esach? Avalo Yain B'Yain. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position is not, he does not take that position when wine gets mixed in with wine. Meaning if I have a drop or a couple drops of Yain Esach that gets mixed in with kosher wine, there Rabbi Shimon Gamliel will not allow you to sell that to a guy, excluding the Yain Esach Shabbat. Shmuel Amar Afilu Yain B'Yain. Shmuel disagrees. V'chein Amar Rabba B'Bachan Amar Rav Yochanan Afilu Yain B'Yain. V'chein Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nasan Amar Rav Yochanan Afilu Yain B'Yain. V'chein Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Bar Avu Afilu Yain B'Yain. And so a number of Amorayim agree with Shmuel's position. Amar Rav Nachman Halacha L'Maisa Yain Esach Yain B'Yain Aser. Chavis B'Chavis Mutter. Stam Yain Afilu Yain B'Yain Mutter. And then the Gemara just basically spitfires the Halacha. The accepted halacha, says Rav Nachman, is as follows. That when I have Yain Esach gets mixed in with other wine, so then it's going to be also, and it's going to be also Afilu B'Mashu, and we're not going to allow you to sell it to a guy, excluding the Yain Esach Shabbat, because in other words, we pass on like Rav, we don't pass on like Shmuel. Two, if I have barrels that get mixed up together, so then I am allowed to sell those barrels, meaning one barrel of Yain Esach gets mixed in with other barrels of kosher wine, so what I'm allowed to do is I'm allowed to sell the entire entity over to a guy, and but with the exclusion, of course, of that one barrel, which is Yain Esach. And so, in other words, the halacha falls like Rav, so, subscribing to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position. And then if it's Stam Yainam, meaning, if we're not talking about actual Yain Esach itself, but we're talking about Stam Yainam, so then Afil Yain B'Yain Mutter. So if I have a mixture of Stam Yainam with wine, so I'm not allowed to drink it because it's not subject to Bittul, but what I am allowed to do is I'm allowed to sell the entire mixture over to a guy, even if it's Yain B'Yain, I could sell it to a guy, excluding Yain Esach Shabbat. Okay. That kind of takes us to the end of the Amud Aleph, and we turn now to Ayin Dalam and Beis, and the next sugya today is going to be kashering. You get a wine press, you buy a wine press from a non-Jew, and you want to use a wine press. Now, let's think this through before we speak it out. The Gemara is going to make a number of variables in the discussion in terms of what is the material of the wine press. Is it made up of either stone or wood or kli cheres or earthenware? And then, of course, the halacha is going to change in terms of what is going to be the koshering procedure. Everything can be koshered. It's just a question of what the koshering procedure is going to be. And then the other variable which is going to come up is going to be whether or not it had some sort of lining. What they used to do with their vats is they used to line it with pitch. In fact, what they used to do is they used to take a little bit of wine, put it into the pitch as the pitch was cooling, as a lining for the interior of the vat. And so that's another consideration also to take in mind. Let's, huh?
Tar.
Okay. Overall,
waterproof seal.
Overall, the overarching thing to remember regarding this entire discussion is as follows. A wine press is used to make wine. It's never heated in the wine press. I mean, the wine is always made cold at all times. So that means to say now that even though Yain Esach is aser b'achila b'shtiyo v'ana, and Stam Yainam also is aser b'shtiyo v'ana, again, I pointed out the Ramah nowadays for the Ashkenazim is mekel. The Ramah allows Stam Yainam mutar b'ana, but in other words, from the standpoint of the Gemara, Yain Esach and Stam Yainam is aser b'shtiyo and aser b'ana, and if I'm buying a wine press from a non-Jew, so in the very least, it's Stam Yainam, and so now I'm going to need to kasher. But when we talk about kashering it, it's never been used for hot. It's always been used for cold. So basically, a simple rinse, flushing of it, generally speaking, would be sufficient. But because of these variables that we talked about, the material that's being used, the material that the vat is being made out of, and also the pitch consideration, so sometimes a simple rinse is not going to be good enough. And so therefore, what we're going to be learning in our Mishnah is the number of variables and how to deal with the variables. At most, which is what we're going to see in the Gemara, at most, what you're going to need is milui v'irui. Milui v'irui is the most intense version of kashering for the wine press that was used only for cold. And that would be to fill it with water, let it sit for 24 hours, dump out the water, and repeat that another two times. We discussed this earlier in the Masechta. And that would work even for Kli Cheres, meaning even though Kli Cheres is very porous and it has absorbed the material, but again, everything was only used for cold, it wasn't used for hot. So therefore, even as we say it's porous and it absorbed the Yain Esach, if I use the procedure of Milu V'Irui, so then it would work there as well. Okay, I know I just threw out a lot of information, but the Mishnah and the Gemara is going to actually go even through more information. So just everything I said was just a preamble. Gashal Evin Shizof Stuff, I have a stone vat. The vat is made out of a material of stone. Stone obviously very hard, very smooth, but I was mizafes. I lined it with a pitch. So again, they used to put a tar lining inside. And again, what they would also do with the tar lining is that before the tar cooled down, they would also put some drops of stam yenam into the tar lining. And the reason why they would do that, as the Rashi says, is that it would take away a lot of the bad odor of the tar. So Evan Shazavsa of Ekochavim min nagvavi hitahara. So says the Mishnah, what are you going to have to do? So you're going to have to do niguv. Niguv literally means dry it. But what it means, explains Rashi, is that I rinse it with water and ashes. Basically a form of detergent. So in other words, it needs a detergent scrub. And then dry it out, and then it's good. Vishel eitz. Now, if the material of the vat is made up of wood, wood is a softer material, a more porous material. Rebbe Omer Yinagev. So Rebbe says, okay, but still, same thing. In other words, a detergent wash and dry it out. The Chachamim Omim Yiklof is a Zephes. And according to the Chachamim, you have to actually scrape off the tar pitch. Vishel Cheres. Now, if it's made up of earthenware, Afa Pisha Kalaf is a Zephes. Harizeh Asura. So the Mishnah says, even if I scrape off the tar pitch, it's still going to be asr. Now it's interesting, the Mishnah says asr, meaning seemingly, and there's no solution. But we're going to learn the Gemara, no, that's not true. In other words, you'll do milui v'irui. It's just meaning that the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says asr, it just simply means that scraping off the pitch is simply insufficient. You haven't kashered it yet. Amar Rava Dafka Zafsa. So Rava says, we're going back to the first case of the Mishnah, the stone that had a pitch lining in it. So it says it needs a detergent rinse. But if all I did was just simply crush grapes in the stone press, but I didn't have a pitch in it, so it doesn't need a detergent wash. It just simply needs a rinsing out, and that's enough. Pshita zafta tanan. Now the Gemara says, okay, but you read the Mishnah, that's exactly what you get out of the Mishnah. Meaning, what news did you give us? So the Gemara says, ma'u detemu wadena filo darach ba'a v'hai dekani zafta rachin demelsa katani. The Gemara says, well, meaning, maybe I would have thought that it needs a detergent wash all the time. Even without a pitch. Why does the Mishnah give the example of pitch? Because that's normally what they do with the stone vat. They normally give it a pitch on it. So, but who I did, the same thing would be true even if it didn't have a pitch on it. Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says that's the Chiddush. That, no. I only need to give it a detergent wash only when it had a pitch lining. Igad Amri Amarava Dafka Zafsav Adarach Ba Lo Sagile Ben Nigov. So the Gemara now has another version. In the second version, if it had a pitch on it and it was also used, so in other words, it was both pitched and used previously, so then detergent wash is not going to be enough. Zafta tanan, ma'u detem, sorry, pshita, the Gemara says, zafta tanan, the Gemara says, now, if I read the Mishnah, isn't that what I'm getting out of the Mishnah? No, the Gemara says, not necessarily, ma'u detem, hu adin da'afilo darach ba. No, maybe the Mishnah is talking about a case of a stone vat that was both pitched and previously used. So the Gemara says, but that's not the correct way to learn the Mishnah. Correct way to learn the Mishnah is that the only time a detergent wash is sufficient is if all it was just simply a pitch was laid on in it. But if I had a pitch and it was previously used, so therefore a detergent wash is not going to be enough. And the Gemara says, and let's illustrate this with a actual case that occurred. So someone turns to Rabbi Chia and says, look, I'm buying for myself a new vat. It happens to be made up of stone. And I need somebody to kosher it. So Rabbi Chia, Amalei L'Rav, so Rabbi Chia turns to his nephew Rav. And Zilba Adei V'chazid Lo Mitzuchas Alai Be Midrasha. And Rabbi Chia says, kosher his vat for him. And I want my feedback to be good feedback. In other words, right? I want all my reviews to be good reviews. And so if you don't do a good job koshering the vat, he's going to come back at me and he's going to start yelling at me in the base magic. So I want a good review. So make sure you do a good job koshering it. So now it was a stone vat, and he's taking a look at it, and it's very smooth. So he says, okay, so this should be good. It's just a simple detergent scrub should be enough. Amar havadeh b'nigav sagila. So he says that, I'll just do nigav, and that will be enough. However, b'hadeh dekazav v'asih chazipile mitusei. V'chazeh daveh malech amra. However, even though the stone looked smooth, and even though I had a pitch on it, he continued to investigate, and he noted, oh, wait one second. This was used before. Meaning that what they would do is they ran a grape press through this before, and what I'm seeing now is pockets of wine that is underneath the pitch. And now what he understood is that it wasn't just simply pitched; it was pitched and previously used, and so therefore there is wine actually under the pitch as well. Amar halo sagale b'nigo. A detergent scrub is not going to be enough. Ela b'kilof, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to remove the pitch to make sure that there's no pockets of wine that's underneath the pitch. And now Rav is going through his mind now what his uncle told him. Make sure you do a good job koshering it, because if you don't do a good job koshering it, I'm going to hear from him in the base medrash. I don't want to hear from him in the base medrash. So make sure to do a good job koshering it. Okay, so anyway, this supports Rav's second version, where if it was a stone vat and it was pitched, but if it was previously used, so therefore a detergent scrub is not going to be enough. You need to scrape out the lining. Tana Rabbanan. And here now we're going to have a brisa. And again, the brisa is going to basically do what we did in our Mishnah. Talk about various vats made of various materials and the koshering process when you're buying this vat from a guy. And now you want to use it, but first you have to kosher it. What do you do? What's going to be a little bit challenging is that all the details in the brisa are not going to synchronize together with our Mishnah, and so that's going to be a bit of a challenge, and that's what we're going to have to try to overcome. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa, Agas, v'hamechetz, v'hamashpech, sho'ov dekochavim. So these are all different instruments used by the guy in order to produce wine. The god, the vat, the mashpech is the funnel, and the mechetz, some sort of intermediary device that's used to transfer from the vat into the funnel. But anyway, equipment basically used by a guy for making his wine. Rebbe Matir Benigov. So Rebbe says it's going to be sufficient if I give it a detergent scrub. The Chachamim Osrim and the Chachamim say that it's Asr. Umode Rebbe Ben Kankanishov de Kochav. Now Rebbe will agree that if we're talking about the jugs of the Ove Kochav Shein Asurin, so that they're going to be Asr, meaning I can't just simply give it a detergent scrub. In other words, there I'm going to have to scrape out the pitch. Uma Hefesh Ben Zelazah, Zemachnis Abikim, Zemachnis Abikim. He says, look, when I'm making wine in the vat, oddly enough, it's not stored there. Meaning, when I say oddly, it's odd that we're going to be more makel by the vat. But he explains, the reason why I'm going to be more makel by the vat is because the wine is made in the vat, but that's it. Once it's made in the vat, it's taken out. So, it doesn't stay there for a long time. However, if you're talking about the flasks, the jugs they use to store the wine, once they're using it to store the wine, so it sits in it for a long time, it's kavush. It basically it gets pickled in that container, and so therefore it's a deeper penetration of the taste of the wine into the actual flask itself. Okay, vishal eitz vishal evan. However, if it's made up of either stone or wood, let me go in the right order: wood and stone. Yinagev. So there, give it a detergent rinse, and that's enough. V'imayu mezufafim asurim. And if, however, it was lined with pitch, so then a detergent rinse is not going to be sufficient. So the Gemara says, what just happened over here? In the Braisa we said that if I have a stone vat, and it had a pitch, and it had a lining, so a detergent rinse is not going to be good enough. The Gemara says, what about our Mishnah? So the Gemara says, our Mishnah told us that if I have a stone vat, and even though I had a pitch in it, so I just give it a detergent rinse, and that's enough. So, Avitara, Masisan Delo Darachba, Brisa de Darachba. So the Gemara says, okay, the difference is between used and unused. Meaning, our Mishnah was describing a stone vat that did have a pitch in it, but never been used before. So there, detergent rinse, and that's enough. Okay, a little ashes, a little bit of water, rinse it out, dry it, and that's going to be good enough. The brisa that says that's not good enough, and meaning, and you have to peel back the pitch, you have to scrape off the pish. The Braisa was talking about what's previously used. And as we described a little bit earlier in this Amud, if it was previously used, now you have pockets of wine that's tucked away underneath the pish because it was previously used, and therefore you have to scrape away the pish. So if I have these equipment that is made up of earthenware, so Rebbe says it's, or you just give it a detergent rinse, and the Chachamim say it's asur. The Gemara says, now that's not an agreement with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, when talking about the earthenware equipment, so that the Mishnah says we're most machmir. Even if I scrape the pitch off, that's still not going to be enough, says the Mishnah. So how do you work that together with the Braisa? Amarava, Sefer Demasnis and Asal Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, well, how do I kasher earthenware equipment that's actually a machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim? And basically what I'll tell you is that our Mishnah, the end of the Mishnah is following the Chachamim, not the opinion of Rebbe. Meaning it's a debate on this issue, and our Mishnah is taking the Chachamim's more stringent viewpoint. Okay. Darsh Rava. Nava Ar Sichu. Rava tells us that if I have equipment that was used for making wine, meaning a vat, and so what I'm going to do is I'm going to do iri kli rishon, meaning another way to kosher it is just simply to take hot water and pour the hot water on the kli, and that would be sufficient. This is what's called iri kli rishon, and that would be a means of koshering it. There's a really long and important tosus over here, Darsh Rava Nava Ar Sichu, where Tosfos discusses what the status of Iri Kli Rishon is. Is Iri Kli Rishon considered like Kli Rishon? Is it like cooking the item inside? Is Iri Rishon less than the status of a Kli Rishon? See Tosfos over here, the Rashbam, the Rabbeinu Tam debate this very issue. Anyway, but here's what we could say definitively. It's good enough to kasher the wine vat. And again, if you think about it, go back to what I said earlier. The wine vat that was used to make wine, even though the wine is usser, but it was all becold, it was all betzoning. And so therefore, the method of koshering it is not going to be, the standard of koshering is not going to be as high as if it was something that was cooked inside. Rava ki hava mishad de gufa laharpanya, sachif lu apumai v'chasim lu abatzrayu. When Rava would be sending empty jugs over to Harpanya, so what he would do is make sure that he would double seal the jugs to make sure that no one would tamper with it. So if it's something where wine was stored in it, so he was afraid that it was going to be used by the guy and therefore become usher, so therefore, in order to transport it, he gave it the double seal to make sure that it was not tampered with. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with the actual koshering procedure of the detergent rinse.